from Fox Sports.
This is Jochen Graf.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
You are listening to the Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
Get off the pitch!
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood!
Ball's going to bounce down at three in the box. Bicycle kick! Goal! Rowdies! What a play! What a shot! And it's 1-0 Rowdies!
Good evening, and thank you for joining us. You're listening live to the Unused Substitutes. We are your Rowdies Talk Radio. We bring the green and gold gospel. We are the podcast of record for your Eastern Conference champion, Tampa Bay Rowdies. We're live on Radio St. Pete, part of the Beautiful Game Network, and presented by Roughneck Scarves. Stephen, who are we shouting out tonight? I say as if I don't see it in front of me, but we're just going to keep up the pretense. Who is our executive producer tonight?
Our executive Patreon producer, drumroll please, is Mitchell Losker. Thank you, Mitchell, for being a longtime supporter of the show and the Rowdies. We've always appreciated your passion for the club and for what we do here every Wednesday night and on the website all week long.
I got to admit, I keep a list of all the I have just a little post-it note with all the names of the people at the producer level, and I just, you know, swap one out each week. I totally forgot where we left off after like 2 weeks ago, and it had been a race, so I'm like, I'm just going to start from the top, and what the hell, Mitchell seems like a good place to start as any. Thank you, Mitchell. So we took last week off. There was general 2020-ness, an ongoing election, absolutely zero news to talk about.
It was rather unfortunate. There was nothing to talk about.
I mean, other than a game not happening, and there's lots of stuff we could talk about with that, which we're going to go with today. But there's still not really a lot of Rowdy specific news. We have one little interview that we're going to play in a short time, assuming power is still on. Power is still on tonight. Stephen, has it been raining just like all day by you?
Yes. Yeah. And in fact, as we air this, I'm going through the closest rain band to the eye right now, like the hardest part of the storm.
Oh, so you're probably getting the part. So I was off from work today. We were closed for Veterans Day. I did an interview with someone from the Rowdies at around 11:45, and then I was a guest on a podcast. I'm going to keep it secret, but you'll hear it on Friday. I was a guest with them starting at 4:30, and we were on for, I think we did like an hour and a half, roughly. I had at least three tornado warnings saying specifically in my neighborhood, go get in the closet now. And I was just like, I don't see anything. I don't hear any strange things going on. So only one said it was like, you know, coming by the airport that's a mile from my house. So that's the only one I got a little worried about. But I do have a lake in the backyard now. But power is still on. Had a couple flickers. But as long as the power is on, the show must go on. So here we are.
Exactly. I've had a couple of transformers in my neighborhood go. I've heard them blow up in the distance. But otherwise, I'm looking at you on a computer screen because I still have internet connection. So obviously, we're just going to keep riding this thing until it dies, you know, like along with everything else in 2020.
Right.
So, you know.
Do you know which Transformer? Was it Starscream? Was it Optimus? Like, which were the Transformers that blew?
Well, let's see here. If it died, then
it's got to be Prime, right? Because he dies in the animated movie.
I cannot. No, it's going to be. I'm going to name it Jazz because I think Jazz is the one that dies in the first Transformers movie when Megatron rips him in half.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Did they explode? Do they go? Yeah. There's a sound clip I need as a Transformers sound. Meanwhile, literally, as you said, power's still on and we're hanging in there. Paul Delgado from Fox News just tweeted out 52-mile-an-hour wind gust in St. Petersburg. Power outages starting to add up. I had that 52-mile-an-hour wind gust around 3:15, so I think you're in the band that I was in for a while there.
Yeah. Oh. Good times.
All right.
It's just not a big deal. It's just a tropical storm.
So we do have... We do have a couple things to talk about. I will start off with the game that wasn't meant to be. The Tampa Bay Rowdies and Phoenix Rising FC were set to play in the USL Cup final at glorious Al Lang Stadium. Trademark copyright 2020. And then it didn't happen. All these days run together at this point, and it's been 2 weeks. Neil Collins, Kevin Foley, and an unnamed player tested positive for COVID-19. The rest of the team was taken to the Rays medical facilities and given rapid testing that came back negative on all of them. At that point, it was decided the game would continue, with assistant coaches stepping in, and we would, I guess, assume, find out on the day of the game who the player was. The next day, what was like 7 or 8 players, I believe, came up as positives. And after some prolonged discussion, USL finally decided to cancel the game altogether and end the season with the Rowdies and Phoenix as conference champions. What's your thoughts on that, Steven? And actually, in the interest of transparency, I'm going to let you run with this for a second because I forgot one vitally important thing I need for the show. So I got to step away for like 30 seconds. I promise I'll be right back, and I know you will have no problem filling the airtime.
Oh, you know.
So let's talk about it.
You know, just me blabbering off. No. Okay. Obviously, you can't start a discussion with this without saying how disappointed I am with how disappointed I'm sure literally everybody is. I'm sure there are people that are angrier than others about what happened. For me, it was mixed and it's weird. So for those that weren't following me on social media, I was actually at Universal Studios last weekend when the news broke on Saturday morning that the championship game would not be happening. So here I am. I've never been to Universal Studios, mind you. I've only ever been to Islands of Adventure up to that point in my life, and that was almost 10 years ago. So I was getting to experience the Harry Potter stuff for the first time in my life. It was amazing. I had a great time. And in the middle of that wonderful weekend, I'm getting text messages from friends going, they canceled the Rowdies game. Obviously, that put me in a really weird head state for the rest of the game, or the rest of the day that I was there. But immediately I was trying to piece together maybe why this decision was made. Well, first of all, there has to be a 2-week period of quarantining with the players that were tested positive before they're even allowed to begin playing and training with the team again. On top of that, you've got international breaks that are about to start here in the next couple of days, as far as the games and stuff like that. That means that you're probably looking at almost 3 weeks where the players had no choice but to be apart from each other. You have to have at least about a week to train with the team back together again before you can start playing games. And then after that, you're probably looking at what? Almost 4 weeks of a delay before you could realistically replay the championship game. Well, there's a multitude of problems there. First of all, you're assuming, of course, that, and as pointed out in a couple of conversations with some articles that have been written since then, first of all, you don't know if you're going to have any clean testing 4 weeks from now as far as players. You could be right back in the same boat. But on a more logistical level, first of all, there's no guarantee you're going to get an ESPN broadcast. So if the TV schedule is blocked up, there's a big question as to, is it still the moneymaker that you're hoping it'll be? Then you start factoring in player contracts. How many player contracts actually ran through the end of November and or the beginning of December? Because as a lot of us know, some of these teams, because like, I don't know, Phoenix, for example, I know the Rowdies under Bill Edwards made a move to start writing year-long contracts. So it might not have necessarily affect our club per se, but there's no guarantee it wasn't going to affect somebody on Phoenix's side. Mm-hmm. Then you start factoring in because of contracts and expirations and, you know, let's just get a 1 week extension. Except that some of these players aren't American citizens and are here on work visas. And guess who's probably not going to say, sure, you can stay an extra week in our country. So immigration status, unfortunately, because of everything compounding, might have become a problem for some of these guys. Because unfortunately, we have a system that's not very flexible, and it pretty much never has been. So you start adding up all of these factors, and there really wasn't an obvious and easy path forward for just rescheduling the game. So as angry, as upset, as disappointing as I was about everything that was happening, once I started kind of taking the time to kind of go through the facts and start figuring out what the real problem would be, it becomes pretty obvious they didn't have a choice. And I think for me, that was kind of my acceptance to the whole situation. And so for me, it's just been a very somber last couple of week and a half now almost.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there were definitely some things, you know, that lent itself to the game being rescheduled, such as using the facility wouldn't have been an issue. There's not like there's any competing events that would be there. You know, the Rowdies kind of are the main tenant. So, but all those other factors, and really, you know, the one I see, and I have this article that I pulled up from yesterday, I think, and it's kind of an interview with USL President Jake Edwards, kind of a general overview about the season. And he mentions, you know, the quarantine period, a week to prepare, no guarantee that it wouldn't be in the same situation 3 weeks later. The one thing they don't ever mention is the ESPN thing, but I got to think that plays a big part of it. This was going to be the first game that was going to be on big ESPN. And later down in the article, I kind of threw it in here, some of these parts into our show notes for tonight. Simply returning to play meant that USL clubs were able to salvage 80% of their corporate sales revenue for 2020, while those that were able to welcome fans into their stadiums, as many as 5,000, could attend fixtures at the new 15,000-seat home of Louisville City FC, will have been able to bring in some valuable ticketing income. So the ESPN thing maybe may not have been like a make or break thing at the beginning of the season before everything went full Zozo on us. But by this point, that's a factor. You know, is there a return on the investment via the broadcast to the cost of operations for the game that night? And I don't think anyone wants to say it, but I think that probably was a factor in the final consideration. I mean, it could have always been an ESPN Plus thing, but that's not what they're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah, so I know as a part of, if you want to call it a grieving process, I don't want to take it to that extreme because that almost sounds silly, but I went out and decided to go out to the soccer stadium on that Sunday night. Basically, we all I kind of threw it out there on social media. Anybody that wants to come out, you know, I'll be out by the fence on a bay shore and kind of just imagining what would have been or could have been. I mean, obviously, because the game was only canceled a day beforehand, they had already rented out equipment. So, I mean, they had the extra generators for a lot of the camera equipment and the broadcasting equipment for ESPN.
Right.
That was still at the stadium. They had actually gone ahead and rented out the bleachers that they had that they, it's the same bleacher setup that they had for the Orlando game a few years ago. They had those bleachers set up for the Phoenix fans and supporters and family members that had traveled out to the game. So they had their own sequestered away section, just like we did with Orlando when we knew that there was a lot of Orlando people coming out. You know, they, the team was ready to go. And, you know, I mean, what was, what's scary, of course, is that in situations like this, because, I mean, obviously Taylor Twellman broke the news. Like, he was the first national level reporter to break the news that there was something happening. And that was very early on Saturday morning, something like 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning. So we all started talking about it, right? And there was more people trickling in that started later confirming things of, hey, this is what we're hearing. It sounds like it's going to be official. Because the official news didn't really break until something like, what, 3 o'clock that day or 4 o'clock that day was when it was finally, like, first of all, they postponed it, and then it was canceled like a couple hours later. The lower-end staff for the Rowdies, of course, they weren't given briefings on a lot of this stuff. I mean, these guys are setting up for the game. They're, you know, they're doing their maintenance work or whatever, setting stuff up. You know, some of us were telling them, you know, hey, like, we just saw a tweet. Did you hear about this? And they're like, no, I'm still setting up for the game. Everything's as normal right now. So, like, that everything that happened happened extremely fast. And it was, and I'm sure media breaking the news story kind of made things not quite as organized as I'm sure the club and the league might have wanted it to be. But yeah, I mean, that that whole situation on that day was extremely fluid. And, you know, it's just talking to more than one person on the Rowdies, and it was like, yeah, this was, it was quick. It happened very fast. And I don't know, I'm not over it yet. Like I said, I went down to the stadium, about 15 other people went out there and met me, and we just kind of talked, and we had a good time, but it really sucked. It sucked not being able to potentially lift another trophy. That really hurt.
You know, for those of us, and I know you were there back then, though we didn't know each other yet, but anyone who was there in 2012 and can think about everything that's gone on since then, like, it takes a lot to get back to this stage, and you don't want to ever take it for granted because you no idea when, or if it's going to happen again. So to get that close and ultimately, miss out on it is, it's heartbreaking. And heartbreaking for us, it's heartbreaking for the Phoenix fans too. And, you know, I saw a variety of reactions from them, and, chosen not to engage on any of them. Cause number one, like, especially for the first day or two, like, everyone needed to vent. You know, there were Phoenix fans that had made arrangements for a last minute trip across country to come to the game, managed to get hold of tickets, and then get here only to find out that there's nothing happening. So I did see, and I'll let you talk about this one too, because you were involved in it. You know, you said a variety of reactions, including those like just out and out blaming the players as if it was their fault. And to be honest, we have no idea. Could there, where this, you know, how, who got infected first, who spread it? I heard, you know, someone in an interview said that Jake Edwards said in an interview that it could have happened in the transportation to Louisville for the conference championship game. As far as we know, that there's been no talk about or no evidence, and I don't have any reason to suspect that there's any, you know, there was some kind of like giant party when they got back here. Like, most of these guys are married or living with their girlfriends and have kids. Like, it's not like a, hey, let's go out and hit Central Avenue and go to $5 and all of a sudden they've all got COVID. I kind of got the feeling someone got it from somewhere and brought it to training. And that's where, either in like the film room or the locker room or whatever, that's where it ends up making its way around. We don't know who any of the players that were tested positive were. Only Neil Collins and Kevin Foley Neil apparently is feeling better, has written and recorded some thank yous, end of the season stuff for supporters. So glad that they are apparently recovering. There's some talk about doing like a preseason kind of almost like a charity shield kind of game between us and Phoenix. We'll see what happens. I'm reminded of the this is a reference you don't get in too many soccer podcasts, but I'm reminded of the clause in the Treaty of Paris of 1783 that ended the revolution between America and the British, where the states were supposed to encourage their citizens to return any property confiscated from loyalists. And the states basically said, hey, you guys should give that property back. Okay, we just encouraged you. We met that clause, and no one ever got their property back. So whether this actually happens, I don't know. It would be kind of cool if you had this kind of like season kickoff series. But, I mean, there's so much about next season, and we can kind of like shift into this, I guess. So much about next season we don't know about yet. I retweeted a tweet last night that said that owners have voted to delay the start of the season, until May 1st. So, you know, two seasons. Oh, you're getting some flickers over there. Two months later than normal, and we haven't heard any official confirmation. And the first question in my mind is, well, when does it end? Because the USL wants that end of October finishing spot for the regular season so they can get to the playoffs and do that kind of in November. If you're starting in May and still trying to end in November, it's going to be a tricky situation.
Yeah, well, I'm going to pump our own selves up a little bit here. First of all, if you've been a loyal listener to the show, then I will say this. You already heard it here first that there was going to be a delay to the season.
Yeah.
Just saying, I'm going to start it off with that. We've known, thanks to, of course, the great reporting by Jeff Reuter when he was on the show and decided to break the news on the show, that we were not going to be starting the season on time next year. We've known that from the beginning. So, you know, I mean, the fact is, this was something that we've all known about. And I mean, it's honestly, at this point, the whole thing is kind of just whatever, you know. The logistical reasons as to why they're pushing it back, obviously they're hoping infection rates go down, and so that way maybe they can get some more states or local municipalities that are capable of hosting fans at stadiums to try and get some of that revenue rolling again, because obviously game day revenue for ticket sales is the biggest single revenue generator for any club in lower division soccer, and probably in soccer in North America almost in general. So delaying the start of the season obviously is an attempt to maybe getting a better situation at that. Hypothetically, though, it's not likely. Maybe you even start seeing some spread out, some rollouts of a vaccine. Maybe I don't know if they would have a chance to get it out that quickly, or if it would be out in a number that would even be impactful on a large scale. But I mean, technically, we can't dismiss that possibility either. And those things only help. I mean, obviously, if you're the USL, you would welcome that news. If I think at this point, if you're anybody, you would welcome that news. But I don't really see a problem with it. I mean, at worst, what? You play another shortened season? I mean, honestly, like, is that the worst case scenario as far as 2021 is concerned? I don't really know if that matters to me a whole lot. You know, like, I don't really care. As long as we've got soccer to watch and talk about and discuss and be passionate about, I don't know if I necessarily care if we have a shortened or delayed start to the season or anything like that.
What if they go back to the group format like this year again?
So to be fair, that would stink. But I also recognize the fact that there are logistical problems to this. And if you've got, not every municipality is capable of or allowing people to go back and forth and everything else, you know, it's one of those things where it's not necessarily possible. Now, that being said, there was a discussion that I had seen that some people have talked about and mentioned about, let's judge the USL's performance for 2020 based on the fact that the championship game didn't happen. Did they do the right thing by not hosting a bubble, whether it was a bubble for regular season games or a bubble just for the playoffs? Now, it's easy to Monday morning quarterback this conversation and say, obviously, this was a missed opportunity on the USL's part. We obviously should have done a bubble from the get-go. Again, that's easy to say, but it's very hard to prove because logistically, it's very expensive to have a setup where a group of people, a large group of people, are permanently stationed at a place for up to a week or up to a month, sorry, 4 weeks. So that way you can go through a whole playoff scenario. And that's assuming that you've got your protocols in place that you can ensure that nobody's infected when they go into the bubble, because typically you have to have a 2 week layover before you even go into a bubble to make sure it's actually a bubble. But it's extremely expensive option to do that. And is that the best way to make sure that seasons and playoffs go out without a hitch? Yes. I think we can generally agree that the teams that have done bubbles, once you get into that bubble, from what I understand, have not had a problem anywhere. That is the best way to do it, but it's also the most expensive. It's not at our level of organization, especially when you start looking around the league, it's not always the most feasible. So, like I said, easy to Monday morning quarterback that. And logically, it's the best thing to do. But I don't know if it was something that was the USL was ever capable of considering.
Yeah, and it's one of the things is people, USL had to call off the League One final, had to call off the championship final. It's easy, and I won't disagree, that you can point that out and say, it didn't work. Like you played the whole season and your way of determining the champion, you didn't get to in either of your top two leagues. So I can understand completely those. And I kind of, it almost makes you feel like these guys went through all of what they did go through kind of for nothing, except the Eastern Conference and Western Conference championship. At least there was a trophy there somewhere. I don't think, a bubble was probably impossible to pull off for a regular season for a lot of these teams, and probably not feasible. You'd have to have a Western Conference and an Eastern Conference bubble going, and then trying to merge those. You'd have to have like 2 weeks in between the conference championship games and the USL Cup final, because you'd have to put these two bubbles together, then allow for another week or two for training. But if they hadn't played at all, I mean, look, Reno 1868, the regular season champion, the top point getters, up and folded out of nowhere. And they're owned by the same guy that owns the Indiana Pacers. Like, financial issues are a serious issue. So if no one had played at all, you'd have a lot of teams going out of business, I would tend to believe. I think it was Jason Davis. I saw him tweet that in his opinion, the most important thing a lower division soccer team can do is stay in existence, because nothing else happens if you don't do that. And we can sit here and say, well, we're owned by the Rays and there's this and that, and this could honestly just up and disappear at any point in time. We don't know.
Yeah.
I'd like to assume not, but
that's something that's valid. Obviously we don't know if everybody's going to be back next year financially because of what happened this year. We technically don't know. Reno, I'm hesitant to say anything about Reno as far as why they shut down so suddenly. Obviously, COVID doesn't help that conversation in any way. But from what I understand, that situation was a bit more complicated than just a straightforward revenue or lack of revenue incoming type of situation. That whole thing was more complicated than that, from what I understand and what I've gathered. But yeah, it's definitely a concern right now, especially with, you know, we were talking about this, what, just a few months ago. It's like, what would potential conference realignments be for next season in general, right? Like, we were talking about which teams would bounce back and forth. And I remember saying, like, back then, I was like, you know, this is going to be a fun thought exercise, but it's also going to be worthless doing in, like, September.
Right.
Because we have no idea who's actually going to be on the field come next year. And we're not even out of 2020, and we can prove that that turned out to be a decent call.
So, like, I mean, right now we know St. Louis FC isn't back, playoff team from last year. We know that Reno 1868 FC is not going to be back, regular season champion from last year. Weren't there a couple, like the two teams or the B teams that were withdrawing or going on hiatus or dropping the League One or something? I think so,
yeah.
Like Portland and Tacoma or something. Like, there was something somewhere. I know what Philadelphia Union 2 was rumored to be part of that situation as well. And that's another thing, and that kind of goes into the next part of this, the article that I wanted to talk about, this interview with Jake Edwards. And obviously, like, they feel the season was overall a success. And maybe in the long term, yeah, because they've tested out their plan for playing during this pandemic. And they've got some stats they can point at to say it worked out on this side. One of the things he mentions is that it was a challenge to navigate the league with team operating under so many jurisdictions, like New Mexico United couldn't play any home games at all. But the USL's own health and wellness protocols, which included social distancing measures, weekly testing, training, and education, resulted in a positive test rate of only 0.41%. That's pretty good. I don't blame them for pointing that and saying, hey, look, this actually kind of worked out. He does say that they believe next year is going to be rough, and the teams know it's going to be tough again, but they're confident as the season goes on, especially once maybe to the midpoint of the season, based on, you know, hope and vaccines, I guess, at this point, that match day revenue will begin to materialize or increase. Some other stats he's looking at to trumpet here, and I've seen some of these posted in several different locations on soccer Twitter, USL soccer Twitter this week at least. Viewership on ESPN Plus was up 500% this year compared to 2019. Five of the league's top 10 matches of all time came in 2020. USL saw 39% growth in followers on social media across its main channels, 24% on Instagram, while earned media coverage was up 58% during the season, capping a growth of 200% since 2018. Look, when people are stuck at home and they don't have anything to do and there's stuff on TV, then they'll watch stuff on TV. Like,
yeah.
All the credit shouldn't go to that, because I think they've done a pretty good job as far as promoting the league and putting it out there. And there's other companies and things they've done deals with to take the presentation of games to foreign countries as well, too. So I don't blame them. I'm not going to, like, mock them for pointing out these things. I think they're important things to look at. It'll be great if we can get to a point where you can balance that plus, like, match day revenue happening again. But we'll see. The one thing they said that hasn't really been affected by the pandemic is the timeline for expansion, since we were just talking about it. I'll flip down to this part. We know Oakland Roots is coming in next season, so that'll be a Western Conference team. Queensborough FC will be coming in 2022, so there's an Eastern Conference team. I saw a reporter I follow who's out west and covers Sacramento Republic says that Fresno is going to be back, not necessarily as the Fresno team that was there before, not necessarily, I can't remember if you said it, not necessarily, it might be a League One team, but there will be a team in the Fresno area again. Sounds like it's different ownership, different franchise name, different, you know, logo, branding, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, Reno goes away, but Oakland kind of takes their place. And Jake Edwards says there'll be some additional expansion in the championship before that league is capped somewhere in the early, maybe mid-30s. Well, take the teams out that we know are out right now, and like we're still in the early 30s. We're like 33, 34. I think 34 if you swap out Reno for Oakland and drop St. Louis. And I know we're going to lose some of the two teams too. I don't remember how many. So we're still – we're kind of in that range. And also that they're going to make – I don't know if he says that that's going to happen before next season. They're expecting to make another 2 to 4 announcements for 2021 in League One, including Fort Wayne with DeMarcus Beasley, and possibly some, you know, the championship, like the B teams dropping down as well. So I always like having fun with expansion speculation, especially. I just want to get back to a point where we've got equal teams in each conference and you can just have the regular single table once through. So it'll be interesting. I don't know.
Yeah.
We keep saying this is, you know, eventually they have to go out and get Jacksonville, right? Like, it's just sitting out there.
Well, that's going to happen eventually. It's just a matter of, for them, of course, it's a stadium thing, but that's going to happen. Absolutely. 100%.
We need other close away days.
Yes.
And I was on this other podcast.
Get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. Driving to Louisville was fun, and I enjoyed going to Louisville and that stadium. Of course, Eyelash Stadium is beautiful, and it is what it is. But I would really not have to rely on trips that far all the time.
So yeah, like if they're sticking with this group format for next year, which we don't know, but this is just speculation. If you're sticking with this group mm-hmm. format, we got to have more than like Miami and Atlanta too. To go back and forth to 3 or 4 times a season, like a Louisville for a one off. Okay, I can do that. I mean, I can go to the airport. It's a mile south of me. I can fly to Louisville. We can make that mm-hmm. work. But doing that, like, you know, 4 times in a season, I don't know about that. I'm going to figure out a different way to make that work. So we'll keep eyes and ears out. As far as team news, like we've heard no personnel. I've seen some other teams have been making personnel moves. People have been re-signed, released, retired.
Almost all of them Western Conference at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Louisville had a signing, but I think he actually signed before we played them.
Yeah.
It was when that signing was first announced. We did get some rowdies in the post-game awards, or postseason awards, not post-game, because there was no game. Postseason awards. Forrest Lasso is your defensive player of the year. The first time, two-time defensive player of the year. Congrats for... By the way, did you see what he did today?
Today? No, I didn't.
So when he announced this, Mark Samat, who I know lives down here, asked him for his jersey or his boots or something, like just on Twitter, just randomly was like, hey, can I have your jersey? Posted pictures today. He received a jersey in the mail, signed by Forrest. Something like "Stay Rowdy, Forever Always Rowdies." Had this big signature, like in message, along with it on the back, which was very cool. So go find his. It's either him or Brett Rutherford. I forget who it was. It's one of them. I think it was Mark, but maybe it was Brett. Anyway, Forrest Lasso, your defensive player of the year. We're biased. I'm not arguing with. I've said it before. Listening to him play, I would give him the award right there. Like those games we went to with like 100, 125 people, listening to Forrest yell at somebody on the other side of the pitch and everybody else around him, like, is just, you know, Seb is the captain and there's no questioning that, but the one, like, there was one game where he got subbed off and he went and handed the armband to Forrest. I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Makes perfect sense right there. I'm pretty sure he's signed for next year.
I believe so. I read 2 years.
Seemed to.
If I read it right.
Yeah, he seemed to imply that in some of the things he's been posting. So can we just go ahead and do a contract extension right now, please? Like, let's. I'm good with him being here long term. Jordan Doherty, who made the move, the permanent move to Tampa Bay in the offseason, because he felt like it was the right place for him to grow and develop and to advance in his game, was rewarded with the goal of the playoffs.
Woo!
And I didn't look at any of the others. I don't have to. Jodo is the winner for me. I'll take that. One other bit of you know, if you're feeling a little sad, feeling a little blue, you don't get to watch your Rowdies play soccer because it's a sight to behold. On Monday at 2:45, which means I might have to kind of keep it open in a window on my computer somewhere where no one else can see it, the United States men's national team is scheduled to face off against Panama and Juan Tejada. So if you want to watch a member of the Rowdies play, there's your opportunity. Hopefully he'll start.
Yes. That would be amazing.
Because this is his first call up for the senior team. He's played with the U-23s before. Scored a goal. I got to watch that. That was fun. But this would be his debut with the national team. The game is taking place, I believe, in Austria.
Yes.
Because the U.S. is playing Wales in Wales tomorrow, and then the Panama game will be in Austria, which will be kind of cool. I'll be able to watch tomorrow. I don't know if I'm going to be able to watch Mondays live, but I'll go back later and watch it also. That's kind of it for what I wrote down for news. Is there anything else you wanted to throw in there before we go to the interview? Or do you want to
up? Not a whole... So the only topic that's left that I wanted to talk about tonight is, and we were talking about this when we were at the stadium the other night, was how going forward do you choose to remember this season, as far as if you're the club, like if you're in charge of the club designing kits for next year and the years thereafter and all that kind of stuff, how do you symbolize this season? Because it's not a trophy, it's not a championship. You can't put a third star above the crest.
You put one of these on it.
You're not putting an Edinburgh on top of the logo.
Just put the girder on top of it. There you go.
You're not putting an Edinburgh on top.
That's what I had to go get, by the way, at the beginning of the show. These were the ones I had bought for the championship game and have not opened yet. They've been in the fridge.
Right. So, again, like, this is a thing, right? You can't put a third star above the crest. It's not a championship. You did not win a league championship. You can't put a third star, because at that point, if you do, you might as well put an asterisk. It's literally the same thing as putting an asterisk above the logo. If you're going to put a third star for a game you didn't play, you can't do that. You can't do it. You can't do an alternate color thing or whatever, because it's literally an asterisk at that point.
I got it.
It's not the same.
I've got the answer. On the logo, the E in Rowdies, make it gold to represent the Eastern Conference Championship.
Oh, Jesus.
There you go. I solved it. I don't know. I agree. No. You don't do a star because you didn't play the game.
I don't mind at all. If you remember in 2013, the kit design for that season, besides adding the second star to the crest, they had on the bottom left side of every jersey, there was like a patch, like a little, like almost like a rubberized patch symbolizing that previous championship. I wouldn't mind something like that. Something for 2020 Eastern Conference champions. I wouldn't mind something like that to symbolize the accomplishment. And I don't mind when it comes to posters up around the stadium type of deal. I wouldn't mind if you're going to honor 1975, if you're going to honor 2012, mentioning 2020 you know, in some of that stuff isn't necessarily out of the question. I just, I would be opposed to a third star. That's my big thing.
Yeah, don't, I wouldn't go with that. But definitely, like, and this is, so I mentioned this on the other show I guested on earlier. You know, every team's got their hashtag, their promotional marketing hashtag. So Phoenix's all year was own the asterisk. Asterisk. I can never say it right. Own the asterisk. To me, like, I wouldn't have even looked at it. Like, if they had won, if the game had been played and the Rowdies had won, whoever had won, to me, there was no asterisk on this season. This is the situation. This is the way the league set it up. There was a playoff system in place. There was a way to determine the overall champion. And if it had been the Rowdies, in order to get to that point, they would have had to beat Birmingham in the playoffs, who was a very good team. They would have had to beat Charleston, who they had lost three times in a row to previously. They would have had to gone on the road and won at Louisville, where they had never won before. They would have had to come back home and then hosted Phoenix in the... To me, looking at that and saying own the asterisk is kind of almost like a little degrading to what the team did. Like, and you've seen some of the players and the coaches and commentators from other leagues like Major League Baseball and the National Hockey League. Like, if there's an asterisk, it's because this was a tougher season to compete in. Like, you might be a little bit more proud of winning the championship in this year because, you know, the NHL players living in bubbles and not seeing their families and having to walk to from the hotel to the arenas in underground tunnels because the hotel was right next to it. Like, you know, hanging out at the only thing to do at the hotel was to hang out at the pool with the other teams, and you kind of, you know, giving them the side eye. Like, that's tougher than the regular season where you're sleeping in your own bed half the time. Yep. And, you know, friends and family are coming to games and flying to games with you in other markets. So, and on one hand, it's easy, like, and going back to what we were saying earlier, it's easy to point at the fact that there was no final and say that the season wasn't a success for the league. But as far as these two teams are concerned, like, there is absolutely no reason not to celebrate what they did this year. Well, except, you know, for Phoenix handballing a goal in and other unrelated issues as well, too. But just strictly on the field, like, to get to the playoffs, to come out of your group, to get to this point in the playoffs, to win your conference championship, that's a big freaking deal. And, yep, you know, 10 years from now, just like we had a, you know, little reunion reminder about the 2012 team, and then, well, obviously not 10 years because it hasn't been 10 years, but how that's been commemorated. Like, this is a team, because honestly, going back and watching, this is some of the best soccer we've seen this organization play since they've been around. You've got some of the best overall players that have put on the shirt, some of the best individual performances in bizarre situations and in empty stadiums and everything else. So I hope that there, you know, that there's some way to that they come up with something to commemorate. I kind of like your idea with the trophy thing, only I wouldn't put it down at like the bottom where it was, but, you know, go look at, well, I say Europe because it's usually a European team that wins it, but the Club World Cup, and they get like that big giant badge, like right front and center on their shirt. Not something that big necessarily.
Oh yeah, you're talking about something like right smack.
But something like, that you're like, yeah, you know, where they do the, like where they did the embroidery that said, or the decal that says, you know, USL Cup final, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Like the conference trophy, like some kind of something symbolic there. Because I dig how, like, so with the, especially with the Premier League, they do like the different colored numbers for the champion, the champion holders for the following season. Something like that to commemorate, hey, Eastern Conference champions from last year, let's go.
Speaking of, obviously, you saw the social media posts leading up to the championship game of the fact that they had actually already put the championship game thing pressed on the jerseys. I know more than one person would be really interested in knowing where those jerseys went to.
Uh-huh.
Because I know people that would probably be interested in getting them. Maybe. Potentially.
That's collector's item stuff right there, because there's not going to be a whole lot of them.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you figure...
I've been joking around.
We were
joking around about, like, other mementos, like if you printed out your tickets to the game that never was, that was a championship game, like, and got it signed by players that were on the team for that year or whatever, like,
nice.
And then framed it. Like, I think that would actually be, I mean, it'd be totally niche, but that'd be kind of a really cool thing to have.
Yeah.
Like, that would be different. That'd be pretty neat.
So Forward Madison kind of did the thing like this, like early on in the season or their season as a fundraiser. They sold tickets to a game that wasn't happening, but it was just give us a 10, 15 bucks. And they sent out like commemorative paper tickets for this thing. If there was like some kind of ticket for 2020, just something to commemorate the entire season. That would be a fun little thing to have.
Yep.
Sounds like something Pendleton could whip up in about 30 minutes and make it look amazing and,
right.
Team up and do that. I hope they figure out some way to recognize this team, because look, we're always going to be biased and say, yeah, I'm pretty sure we would have won the final. I think we'd have done all right. But that would have been maybe one of the best games to watch this club play. Go up against a team like Phoenix, their offense, our defense, and just see what would happen. Like, I just kind of, you know, not just for the route. And this is one of the things I said was, you know, we've seen so much, we saw so much stuff online about people talking up this game from people we don't normally see talking about the Rowdies. Like, it had gained some literal traction in the community, and it felt like, you know, we made that step up on the pitch to what you might consider an elite team now when you beat a Charleston and when you beat a Louisville in Lynn Family Stadium. But to be able to maybe make that same step off the pitch in the community, expanding the reach and the fan base here a little bit. I'm disappointed that didn't get to happen. And I think it would have been a really good night for the league as well to have that game, to have it on ESPN. You know, I see at least two or three tweets a week online that people are like, hey, did anyone know the Tampa Bay Rowdies are still around? And it's like, yeah, that, you know, here's a chance you could have reached out and made that connection there. You know, there's people out there who just randomly have the original Rowdies on their mind, and maybe to find out that they're back and there's the new version. It's just, I don't know. It's a lost opportunity, and that's the worst part.
Yep.
When it is.
It stinks. It does. It stinks.
Speaking of opportunity, I'm going to try and make this transition work. It's probably not going to. Speaking of opportunity, we've all got the opportunity to get some exercise over the upcoming Thanksgiving festive period. The Thanksgiving where you're not supposed to go see anybody, be around people, don't even look at the turkey when you eat it. Be very careful. So a couple weeks ago, the Rays did the Running with the Rays 5K fundraiser for the Rays Baseball Foundation, like the charitable arm of the Tampa Bay Rays organization. My wife and I did that one. Like, you know, sign up for it, they send you, there's a medal, and you record your time in an app, and you do all this stuff, and then, you know, get some exercise and raise some money for good causes. And my wife had said at that point, she's like, oh, it'd be great if they did one that was like, you know, that was Rowdies. And it's like, yeah, it'd be kind of cool. I'd actually like them. Big giant clunky medal with something Rowdies on it. Well, like a week or two later, here comes the Running with the Rowdies 5K over Thanksgiving or on Thanksgiving Day, but they said, you know, you can do it whenever. So signed up for it right away. Jake actually is the first one that signed up, put together a team. I've been told we are the top fundraising team right now because he had this great idea. I have all those Juan Tejada stickers that I never got to bring to the stadium and distribute. Or do anything with. So if you sign up, I also learned as part of this that there is a promo code for the unused substitutes to sign up. You can get a discount on your registration. Nice of them to do that after I already registered. I'm not going to complain. But I talked a little bit earlier with the executive director of there's the Rays Baseball Foundation Rowdy Soccer Fund. They're basically the same organization, but working to raise money for charitable and other needy causes in the community. I had a chance this morning to talk to Stephen Thomas, the executive director, while the Rays were just starting. A little bit about what the foundation does, about the 5K, and about what are some of the projects they're looking at to fund with the proceeds from this. So I'm going to play this. It's a little bit under 6 minutes, and then we'll come back and wrap up. My guest today is Stephen Thomas, the executive director of the Rowdy Soccer Fund. Stephen, thanks for hopping on. We're recording this a little bit before the show tonight in anticipation of weather conditions deteriorating, and it's happening like out my window as we speak. We want to talk a little bit about the Running with the Rowdies 5K, the Rowdy Soccer Fund, and kind of what you guys do. So tell me a little bit about yourself and the Rowdy Soccer Fund. What's the story behind that?
Well, thank you, Matt. I really appreciate you having us on to talk about really the Rowdy Soccer Fund and kind of what we're doing to give back to our community. So once the Rays actually purchased the Rowdies a couple of years ago, we decided that we were going to create the Rowdy Soccer Fund as an additional way to give back. And kind of the way that we always view the work we do from the Rays Baseball Foundation and the Rowdy Soccer Fund is that every dollar we raise, we want to give back to the community. You know, this year has been a challenging year on the fundraising level for our organization, for many other nonprofits as well. And I think one of the things that I've been very proud about is that we've met and exceeded our contributions to other groups. So although we're struggling on our own, we've actually given out more than $1.4 million combined in funding through the Rays and the Rowdies Foundation. So that kind of opportunity to give back when people are struggling is something that we've been very fortunate to do throughout this whole entire year.
Awesome. The next event you guys have coming up is going to be, I got my email about it, my confirmation email, and it says, you know, on Thanksgiving or, you know, kind of whenever you can get, you can work it in, is the Running with the Rowdies 5K event. Tell me a little bit more about the event. What's the details?
Yeah, so that's really the benefit of a virtual 5K. I mean, you can do it really the comfort of your own time and comfort of leisure. We've kind of set it up with a very cool medal that's very Thanksgiving themed. But it is something that is really just, you know, it can be competitive if you want it to be. It can be something leisure. It could be just a great way to burn off some calories after that Thanksgiving pie. So an opportunity to give back to the foundation and also really enjoy some exercise. Hopefully it will be a beautiful day, not like today, right?
Yeah. And for anyone who's actually managing to have Thanksgiving with friends and family, you know, we always need a break from everyone a little while at some point in the day. This could be a good excuse to go and do that. This is all raising money for different projects and different charities that you guys have your eyes on. You talked about the money that you distributed before. What kind of projects, what do you guys have in mind to benefit from the proceeds from this event?
Yeah, so with the Rowdy Soccer Fund, we kind of go into four different core areas. So education, youth development, social responsibility, and wellness. And it's intentionally broad because we want to be able to react to what happens. For example, like when COVID hit, we weren't planning for, you know, to give back to COVID, but it allowed us the opportunity to really kind of make an educated focus in kind of COVID relief funding. We don't really know what the impact of this hurricane is going to be, right? So like, you know, with this coming in the Tampa Bay area, we want to be at least flexible enough that we can adjust to what the needs of our community are. So kind of same thing with that, with all of these funds for the Rowdy Soccer Fund, we are planning some holiday programming with some dental toolkits and some food distribution and some Rowdy Soccer balls. But we want to be flexible because we want to make sure that we're adjusting to whatever the needs of the community are and just doing it in a very sustainable way.
If there's an organization out there that would like to possibly be a beneficiary, is there a way that they can get in touch with you guys or kind of put their names on your list or in front of you to be part of this?
Absolutely. So kind of the best way we do that, we just have a community account. So community@rowdysoccer.com is the best account, just a kind of information. We're still figuring out what our grant programs look like for next year. But yeah, that is absolutely the best way for any nonprofits who are interested in getting involved and learning more about what we do. Just Rowdy's, community at rowdysoccer.com.
Okay. All right. And last thing, I'll let you go, but thanks again for joining us. How can people sign up and or donate? Because it's not even if you're not able to participate there, you still are accepting donations, right?
The Unused Substitutes is one of our leading fundraising teams right now. But all of the information, you would go to rowdysoccer.com/5K. And actually, if you use the promo code UNUSE, you will receive $5 off your registration. So there's two different registration points. There's a $30 price point, which you get the medal and the bib. There's also a $50 premium registration, which includes two tickets to a Rowdy's 2021 home game. So that information is on rowdysoccer.com/5K. And make sure you use the promo code UNUSE when you sign up.
All right. Well, Stefan, thanks for joining us today. Is there anything else you want to say or put out there or talk about for the soccer fund or the 5K?
No, man. Just really appreciate your guys' time and appreciate your dedication to the Rowdies. I know it's been a difficult and trying year. So thank you very much for the support and letting us talk about the Rowdy Soccer Fund.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us and good luck with the event. I'll make sure to post pictures with my my medal and everything after we go work off some turkey in the next few weeks.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for joining us. All right. So thanks for them. I don't know if you could actually hear the kind of surprise in my voice. I can't remember if Jake told me or not that we have a promo code, but I was like, oh, wow, that's kind of cool. We have a promo code. So the two things that that I hit on in the interview that I want to make sure I repeat on here in case people are interested. If you are part of a charitable organization or know someone who maybe would be a good beneficiary of the funds that they're raising, you can send them an email at community@rowdysoccer.com and get in touch with them that way. And if you would like to sign up or donate, go to rowdysoccer.com/5K. If you're going to register, you can use the code UNUSED to get, I think it's a $5 discount on your registration. You can also donate to our team instead of, if you don't want to, sign up to go walk around the house or walk around the neighborhood on Thanksgiving Day. I figure we all have one or two family members, if we're going to be around them, that we could use a break from for, 45 minutes or so, to go wander around the neighborhood. So it could be a good way to do that. But if not, you can donate. And then, if you sign up to do it, or if you donate, we will send you a limited edition lying around my house. Forgot to put them in the mail today to Jake. Tejada sticker. And I said that because that's the way the sticker literally looks. Like if you looked at it, it would just say Tejada. So thanks to Stefan for making time to talk to me this morning so that we could get that on the show. They are very interested in making this a successful thing and hopefully a recurring thing. I actually was talking with Lee Cohen about what could we do to help them publicize this some more, and that's where we got into the setting up an interview to talk about it and some of the, you know, explain what they're doing it for and who they want to benefit from it. So, you know, we always say we want to see, you know, a soccer club, in order to be a club and not a franchise, be active in the community and stepping up to do things, and this is one of the ways they're trying to do it. So let's get behind them and let's make this kind of successful. I'd like to keep doing this every year.
Absolutely. I've still got to get, I mean, full disclosure, I still got to get my, my registration in. So it looks like I'll be able to take advantage of that little, discount promo, but I definitely want to support the show and obviously what the Rowdies are doing and the raise by extension. Cause obviously it's a great cause. There's no reason not to, I mean, everybody's going to be stuck. I don't think they're doing the major turkey trot this year in Pinellas County, I'm pretty sure. So,
yeah, they canceled the one down like here you're in have, Manatee also.
Say what? Yeah, so, you know, it's you're not going to have your traditional options this year anyways for those of you that do participate in those Thanksgiving Day runs. So there's no reason not to chip in a few bucks and help out. And for a good cause, it help. Obviously, it helps the show because – we've obviously got a team. We have a discount code. It helps us. You support us. That would be awesome. But again, it's a community building event. let's rally behind it and try and put a positive spin on the end of 2020 after what has been seemingly 20 years of our lives packed into about maybe 9 months. Let's try and cap off this year in a good way before the major holidays really get going here. And yeah.
I agree. All right. Anything else we need to throw out there?
No. Be safe, everyone. Obviously, the storm is almost past us, but I know that there's a lot of coastal flooding going on and some storm surge issues. So if you're listening to us, you live in some of those low-lying areas near the coast, just be safe. I know that they're starting to see a lot of seawater come up over the walls and into the streets and stuff like that. So I hope everybody's safe and that everybody will be able to run through this with no problem. Again, it only overemphasizes what everybody's been saying for the last almost, 15 years now, that this is an exposed area when it comes to direct hits. And thankfully, this one's a small and weak storm by comparison, but definitely pay attention to your tropical weather. And me being the meteorologist nerd will always remind you of that. Because, yeah, when the big one hits, it's going to be a problem. So for those of you that are out there tonight, make sure you guys are safe, and we'll be happy to see you guys in probably 2 weeks, I would think, for the next show.
I would guess. I do want to say, you can analyze the maps and the satellites and the data and everything all you want, but we all know this is happening for one reason and one reason only. The storm was taking a westward track and moving away from our area. Because everybody was doing the only thing you should be doing with White Claw and all those other crappy seltzer drinks and dumping them into the Gulf in order to scare the storm away. Well, at some point you all stopped and it shifted eastward overnight. And now we're dealing with this because someone decided to drink one instead of dumping it in the Gulf. This is all your fault, someone.
Or behind door number two of alternative theories, he just wanted to come by and get some Aaron Brew, and that's the real reason he decided to come back this way.
He was thinking
about it. He wasn't sure. He was kind of, on the fence for a little bit because he was like, that's kind of a weird drink. He's heard some weird things about it. Maybe didn't know what store to go to. And then once he found where you could get it, he made the decision and just made a little beeline right for it.
Well, I got two more left from my championship stash, and Ada cannot have any. All right, Steven, I have counted all the segments. I can certify that this show has now reached completion. You thought we were getting a whole show in without doing some kind of election reference.
Are you saying it's time to stop the count?
I've seen enough. I'm going to call it a show for the evening. Steven, who's your We Love You?
Oh, man. Okay, so in a situation like this, because we were robbed of being able to pick a team MVP and everything else, I'm just going to do the blanket, okay? I'm going to do the entire Tampa Bay Rowdies, players, coaching staff, front office staff, game day operations, the whole nine yards. Thank you for an amazing 2020 under the most ridiculous circumstances known to man. We appreciate all the hard work, all the passion, all the blood, sweat, and tears you guys poured into it. We appreciate the fact that all of you guys were asked to do things that were not your normal responsibilities. And we were able to pull through and have a successful season for the season that we did have. And so my We Love You to cap off the 2020 season is to every single person that works with a Rowdies on their chest. Thank you for all the time and effort you put into this year.
I'll echo that. I mean, this big break after week one and then group format thing, it kind of felt like one season turned into four seasons. So shout out to them and also to the groundskeeping crew who've done an amazing total landscaping job. So we shout out to the one season that felt like four seasons and the groundskeeping crew who with total landscaping. It sounded better in my head when I was working this out. Anyway, Thank you to the Rowdies. Thank you to everybody who listens. I probably should go back to the show notes with the actual script stuff written in there because I'm just looking at some of my interview notes from today. All right. Oh. Thank you, as always, to Wolfface, to Radio St. Pete, and to Shamrock, who did note today they are pouring while it's pouring. I didn't get a chance to go in there. They will be showing the U.S. game tomorrow. Even though I'm now going to be working from home, my daughter still has to go to school. They have announced, possibly, we'll see. The area around her school tends to flood pretty easy, so I don't know. but the game will be on. I might be able to get a chance to watch it now. But thanks to them, as always, for all their support. Thank you to everybody else who continues to share, subscribe, rate, and review our show. It's always helpful. Steven, what is another helpful thing that people can do?
If you love what we do, if you want to support us and take that level of support one step further, Patreon is the best way to support the show. Starting from as little as $1 a month, you can help us pay the bills for running the website and for being able to host this program live on the air every week. There are different levels of support. If you wanted to go higher than that, we do offer upwards of $10 or more. But every amount that you can contribute definitely helps us to make sure we're not paying for everything out of our own pockets.
And as always, thanks to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier to MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com.
And if you are tired of the same old uniforms and cookie cutter templates from Nike and Adidas, and you are looking for a unique, completely custom kit for your youth club, Sunday league squad, an adult, or even a pro team, Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at a very affordable price. Let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com.
All right, I would assume, barring lots of player news or something coming out in the next week, that, it'll probably be 2 weeks before we do this again. So we'll talk to you later. Go listen to Soccer Crush on Friday, just saying. Steven, it's been fun. I will talk to you soon.
It has been fun. The power stayed on, so that's awesome.
You had a couple flickers. I had a couple flickers. Let's wrap this up before everything shuts down.
Pretty much.
Only us can pull off a show during a borderline hurricane with next to no issues, but mess it up every time else.
Hosting a show, literally, I think I saw it's like 20 miles away. Like, the eye of the storm is literally about 25 miles to 30 miles away from where I'm sitting right now. That's pretty hilarious.
Suck it, Ada.
It's pretty amazing.
All right, talk to you guys soon.
The Rowdies run here, the Rowdies run there, they kick the ball around. The Rowdies run here, the Rowdies run there, and then they fall on the ground. Oh, the Rowdies, the Rowdies, the Rowdies are kicking the grass.